I want to talk a little bit this morning about implosions. There are explosions, there are implosions. And there are times in our lives that we have implosions when things just seem to come in on us and everything falls apart, whether it might be business or relationships, etc. Whenever they take down a building, I remember when they took down the Methodist School of Nursing building, I used to sit in front of the Methodist Hospital, where they're now building their new ER with 20-some rooms, 27 to be exact. When they took that building down, they usually take these buildings down early in the morning, usually on a Sunday, when there's not a lot of traffic. They wire these things up with explosives, and we all like to somehow see that when this structure that is solid and big and been there for a long, long time in a matter of seconds implodes on itself. It doesn't go out. It comes in on itself and just ends up a big pile of rubble, which is kind of intriguing and at the same time scary that something that big can be brought in on itself that quick. Sometimes we can have implosions in our lives as well. If a person were to have a business, like I have a business and something would go wrong that you didn't anticipate, and we've had times in the past where I worried about it, a business can actually implode. It can actually turn in on itself and become non-profitable and non-functioning because of things that have happened that you didn't anticipate, or perhaps wrong decisions that you made that made it implode on itself. Relationships can implode on themselves. It can just turn in on themselves and destroy the relationship. All of us have the very real possibility and probably the very real experience of having spiritual implosions where we just turn in on ourselves, our spirituality turns in on itself, and we find ourselves a pile of rubble. Just a pile of rubble. It seems to me that spiritual life is not so much as a incline up as it is a stair step up of up, down, up, down, up, down. And sometimes we get discouraged with the downs. Sometimes we get the feeling spiritual like Humpty Dumpty that fell off the wall and we couldn't put it back together again. And what I'm here to talk about this morning is an example that we've talked about before of God putting Humpty Dumpty back together again. God is capable of taking our implosions and putting them back together better than they were before. Not equal to where they were before, but better than they were before. Talked to someone this week that was going through a very difficult trial. Very difficult trial. And I probably in the last 2 weeks spent 5 or 6 hours talking to this individual late at night. And we talked about this is difficult, what you're going through, that when you're done, you'll be better. Doesn't seem like it when you're going through it, but when you're done, you'll be better. The person that imploded, obviously, that you think of first would be Peter, and we're going to talk about him this morning. Peter, the impulsive one. The one who always wanted to take the lead. We know about him just because of his makeup, so much is written about him. But the problem with Peter was not only his nature, but his timing was terrible. This man just had terrible timing. In Matthew, the 26th chapter, verse 33 and 34, it says, Peter answered and said unto him, though all men should be offended because of thee, yet will I never, ever, ever, ever be offended because of you. And Jesus said unto him, verily I say unto him, that this night before the cock crow thou shalt deny me thrice. You know, there was nothing wrong with Peter's promise. Peter meant what he said. When he said it, he meant it. He had all good intentions. He believed that was what was going to happen. Whatever happened, he could not envision himself ever denying Christ. Couldn't think of it in a million years. I will never, ever, ever do this. It was a good promise. And sometimes we make good promises too, and some things happen the same way as they did to Peter. Peter had a lot of self-confidence. He had a lot of self-confidence. He was confident in himself. He's confident in his relationship with Jesus. Confident in his power to control himself and his actions in whatever circumstances might arise. He was confident, but that didn't work for him or us. He didn't understand the weakness of the flesh. Reading on. Peter said unto him, though I should die with thee, yet will I not deny thee. likewise also said all the disciples. Then cometh Jesus with them into a place called Gethsemane, and said unto the disciples, Set ye here while I go and pray yonder. Took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then saith he unto them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here, and watch with me. He went a little farther, and fell on his face, and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. And he cometh unto the disciples, and findeth them asleep, and saith unto Peter, What, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray, that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again the second time, and prayed, saying, O my Father, this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it. Thy will be done. Came, found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them, went away again, and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then cometh he to his disciples, and saith unto them, Sleep on now, and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me. How easy, Jesus said, how easy it is, despite your best intentions, besides your self-confidence, your promise, how easy it is for us to fail and to let the flesh overcome our good intentions. We've all been there. We've all done it. Peter did it 3 times right here. 3 times. Jesus said, pray while I go over there. Comes back, he finds him asleep. Peter has this thing about threes. Threes. Jesus comes back and says, pray. Comes back, they're asleep. Comes back a third time, they're asleep again. Peter had no intentions of going asleep. Peter had every intention of praying and helping Jesus in any way that he could. But don't you ever underestimate the influence that being a human and the flesh that that means has on you and your ability to be spiritual. Don't ever underestimate that. Because we all have it. We all have it, and it's always working in us. And if you think you have control of it, you're lying to yourself. You're lying to yourself. It's there, and it's going to influence you irregardless. Going on just a bit further in another account, in John 18. When Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the brook Cedron, where was a garden, into the which he entered and his disciples. And Jesus also, which betrayed him, knew the place, for Jesus ofttimes resorted thither with his disciples. Judas then, having received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, cometh thither with lanterns and torches and weapons. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, Whom seek ye? They answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. He saith, I am he. And Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them. As soon as he had said unto them, I am he, they went backward and fell to the ground. And then asked them again, Whom seek ye? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus answers, I have told you that I am he. If therefore you seek me, let these go their way. Let these go their way. In John 17 and 12, Jesus said, when praying to God about his disciples, he said, These I have kept safe. These I have kept safe. And again in 18 and 9, Jesus says, Thus the saying might be fulfilled which he spake, Of them which thou gavest me have I lost none. Let these people go. And the instructions to the disciples were, Get out of here. Get out of here. Go. Get out of here. This isn't about you. Get out of here. And Peter disobeyed. Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and smote off the high priest's servant, cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. You know, that guy's got guts. He's got a whole army of people here. It's in dark. They've got lanterns. They've got weapons. He's by himself. There's no indication any of the other disciples did this. He says, no, you're not taking Jesus. He takes a sword, and he's going to take on the whole crowd? I like the macho. This guy is macho, testosterone-driven. He is going. Okay? He is going. But in verse 11, Jesus said, "Put up thy sword into the sheath. The cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it?" Looking at it from human terms, it seemed like the thing to do would be, if you're a man, protect the leader. Come on, stand up, protect the leader. That's what we do. And that's how we get in trouble sometimes. We look at spiritual situations in a human, worldly way. We don't quite see them the way that we normally should have. Peter was looking at this situation from his standpoint, from a human standpoint. Jesus is looking at this situation from his, which is totally different. I'm supposed to drink this cup. This was planned centuries ago. Get out of the road. Peter, get out of the road. You're not even supposed to be here. I told you to leave. Get out of here. In 2 Corinthians 10 and 4, Paul talks about we don't fight this battle with swords. So Peter failed to pray. Peter slept when he should have been awake. Peter disobeyed a commandment from God. And he looked at everything from a worldly perspective. He's on the road to implosion is what he is. On the road. Continuing on. Then the band and the captain, officers of the Jews, took Jesus and bound him and led him away to Annas first, for he was father-in-law to Caiaphas, which was the high priest that same year. Got to get to where I need to be. Now Caiaphas was he which gave counsel to the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people, and Simon Peter followed Jesus. What are you doing? And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple, and went in with Jesus to the palace of the high priest. You're not even supposed to be here. I told you, go away. Go away. You're not involved in this. And we all know the story. A little girl comes up to him and says, aren't you one of his? He says, no, I'm not. No, I'm not one of his. And then a man with a little bit more confidence says, I think you're one of his. Said, no, I'm not. I'm not one of his. And then another man who was a relative to the high priest's servant got his ear cut off. It's interesting. He had a motivation for remembering. Said, you're one of them. You're one of them. And Peter denied it again. Peter denied it with an oath. Matthew, the 26th chapter and 74. This is an oath on himself. 26 and 74. Then began he to curse and to swear, saying, I know not the man. I know not the man. If I'm not telling you the truth, let lightning strike me. This is a self-oath, an oath on himself. And the rooster crowed, and he went out and wept bitterly. Peter went from the leader of the disciples to the man who had publicly denied Christ in less than 24 hours. Less than 24 hours. Amazing how man can fall. Amazing how we can fool ourselves that we're so much stronger than we are. Have you ever promised God something in the morning and found yourself breaking the promise by the evening? Same promise. No intentions of it. Fully meant to keep that promise when you made it. And you wake, you find yourself looking in the mirror in the evening and you've broken the promise you made that very morning. That very morning. Peter committed apostasy. Apostasy. Denial of faith. He publicly renounced his commitment and acknowledgement of Jesus as the Son of God. Publicly did it. Like one of you getting up front here and saying, I no longer believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. I think he was just a prophet. Or I don't know. He may have been a lunatic. Anybody that would go give himself to be killed on the cross and he just a man, that's ridiculous. He was an idiot. That's what Peter did. That's what Peter did publicly. So Peter, in addition to all the other things he is a bold-faced liar. He's a liar. A public liar. This same Peter who had seen so much been privy to experience so much. The same Peter that in Matthew 16 and 16, when Jesus asked, "Whom say ye that I am?" said, "You're Christ, the Son of the living God." Of course, the only people there were the disciples, so that's pretty easy. "You're Christ, the Son of the living God." That same Peter is now standing up and saying, "Let lightning strike me if I'm one of his, because I don't even know who he is." Same one. That same Peter who helped feed the 5,000, who picked up the baskets full afterwards, suddenly says, "I don't know him. I don't know him." The same Peter that Jesus said was going to be one of the leaders of the church. Same Peter. Just because you're okay, you were okay yesterday. Just because things seem to be in order yesterday, doesn't mean they will be today. Doesn't mean they will be today. I want you to think and understand that Peter did not plan on doing this. He would have chopped off more than your ear if you just suggested to him before it happened. He had no intentions of doing this. He loved Jesus. He was in awe of Jesus. How can you help but be in awe of someone who walked around and taught and went in and raised people from the dead that had been dead for some time? Could feed 5,000 people with a sack lunch? Could make the water stand still? How could you help but be in awe? He loved Jesus. He was in awe of Jesus. Jesus was his God. Yesterday. Peter forgot what Jesus had predicted until Jesus looked at him. I don't know about that look. Talks about it in Luke 22 and 61. The Lord turned and looked upon Peter. You can think about that look in a lot of different ways. Was it disappointment? Was it anger he saw on his face? Was it surprise? Was it care and worry about Peter? I don't know. You ever had somebody that you cared about? If you care about them for very long, they don't really need to talk sometimes, do they? You can tell by the look on their face. It's something's not right. It's not right. Peter knew what wasn't right. And the rooster crowed, just as Jesus had predicted. Why did the rooster crow? Why did that rooster crow? Because that's what roosters do. Okay? Jesus was in charge of nature. He could make that rooster crow whenever he wanted to. Jesus knew the future. He knew that rooster was going to crow. But why do roosters crow? Roosters crow at the beginning of a day, not at the end. At the beginning. This rooster crowed, and this was the beginning. This was the beginning of Peter's life anew. This is the beginning of the new Peter. And Peter had to go all the way down before Jesus could bring him all the way up. This is the start. Jesus knew it and informed him of it. In Luke, the 22nd chapter, in verse 31, the Lord said, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan had desired to have you that he may sift you as wheat." You ever feel like you've been sifted like wheat? Like you've been put in on a big screen of some kind, and your world is going, your whole world's going like that, and parts of you are falling through, and you don't know if the good parts, the bad parts, you don't know which is which? "But I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not. When thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren." Jesus had prayed for him ahead of time. We need Jesus to pray for us. The great part about the story of Peter is not him falling asleep. It's not him standing up for Jesus in a macho way and cutting off the servant's ear. It's not falling when he shouldn't have. is not denying Christ three times. The best part of the whole story is the restoration. Because that's what I want to see. I don't want to hear about somebody else's failures. I don't want to hear about how somebody else failed. I know how to fail. I'm pretty good. I know how to fail. I know how to come apart. I know how to find myself doing things that I said I wasn't going to do. How breaking promises in the evening that I made that morning. I know how to do that. What I need to know is how to be restored. I need some hope. I need some light at the end of the tunnel. That's what I need. And Peter's story gives us that. In John the 21st chapter. Jesus has been crucified and Jesus is raised from the dead. And Peter and the other disciples are sitting around, and Peter says, Let's go fishing. Right back where we started. We all go back to our old ways. They're all there. We think we've killed them. We think we got rid of them. They're still there. Laying under the surface, ready to come to the forefront. Peter didn't go hunting. He didn't go for a hike. He didn't go read something. He went fishing. Those are old habits. They're still there. Our old habits and ways of thinking are still there. I go fishing. They said also, we'll go with you. They went forth and they got into the ship, and that night they caught nothing. Does that remind you of any other story? What happened when Peter was called originally to be a fisher of men? They caught nothing. They were fishing, and they caught nothing. Peter is deja vu. He's right back where he started. Same story. Same circumstances. Different ending. I'm going fishing. They're out there fishing, and Jesus said, are you catching anything? And they said, nope. And he said, cast it out on the other side. Sound familiar? This fisherman didn't know which side to fish off of. Every time Jesus shows up, he's telling him you're on the wrong side of the boat. Same story. Same exact story. In a collapsed life, we tend to go back to the same thing. In Luke 5 and 10, Jesus had told him, you'll fish for men from now on, but he'd forgotten that. And we're sometimes tempted when we find ourselves doing things that are totally opposite what we intended. Totally opposite what we promised. We're sometimes tempted to say, I've blown it, and I'm going fishing. Because God surely has had it with me. He's had it. God can't use me any longer. I've blown it. And someone said, I think that's Jesus on shore. I think that's Jesus on shore. Old Peter shows up. The old Peter shows up. He is so excited. We don't know how far from shore he was. We have no idea. We don't even know if he measured it out and thought, I can swim that far or I can't swim that far. Peter looked, that is Jesus on shore, and jumped in the water and started swimming. They were rolling there. They were going there. He just couldn't wait. Started swimming as fast as he could and swam to shore to see Jesus, who had prepared breakfast with his fish. I don't know where Jesus got his fish. Where did Jesus get his fish? Jesus always has fish. Jesus always has blessings to give us. So they eat breakfast together. Peter's thrilled to see Jesus alive. You would be too. If you'd seen a person die that death, and to see them alive. If you'd seen anybody die, I've seen lots of people die. More than I want to remember. I can tell you, it would shock me if I saw him the next day. And that's not a horrible death like on the cross. I wonder what it's like to sit down and have breakfast with the Son of God who died just a few short hours ago. What is that like? I wonder what the fish tasted like. I wonder what they had. I wonder what they talked about. How do you initiate a conversation with the Son of God? Resurrected. I don't know where you start. I don't have any idea where you start. So Jesus started for them. After they're done eating, Jesus looked at Peter and said, Peter, do you love me more than these? And we all know that these words are different. These words are different, that the agape that Jesus used means a self-sacrificial love. But more important than this statement is, Peter, do you agape or love me more than these? More than these. Who'd bragged? I don't care if all the rest of them deny you. I will never deny you. Peter, do you agape or love me more than these? Peter is understandably a little gun shy. He's been here before. Same boat. Same circumstance, same everything. He's been here before, and he remembers what he said. In front of everybody, I will never, ever, ever, ever leave you. I would give myself agape for you. He's not going there again. Jesus, you know that I love you. I like you like a brother. Reality has set in. Peter has come to realize he wasn't as spiritual as he thought he was. He wasn't as strong as he thought he was. And he's not going out on that limb again. And so Jesus, despite the fact that Peter hasn't answered his question yet, Simon Peter, do you agape me? I like you. Jesus answers and said, feed my lambs. Peter, there's still a place for you here. There's still hope for you here. There's still light for here. There's a purpose here for you. You still are valuable to me. Feed my lambs. I don't know how long the time frame was. I don't think these follow up just like here that we read them. A little bit. They're sitting around the fire and Jesus looks over at Peter and says, Peter, do you agape me? I thought we just had this conversation. Peter, do you agape me? Didn't ask more than these now. You never want to get in the place where you're judging your spirituality based on how you compare to other people. Because they have their own spirituality. They have their own strengths and their own weaknesses and their own things to work through. Don't judge your spiritualness by somebody else's. Whether you're weaker or stronger. First time he asked more than these, that was a bad place to go. Peter's been there. This time he just asked, Peter, do you agape me? Not more than these, just you, Peter. Do you agape me? Peter said, I like you. I like you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep. Not my lambs now, my sheep. A little more responsibility. Peter, is, for one of the first times, if not the first time in his life, confronting the authentic spiritual Peter. He knows his weakness. He's reacting from his weakness, from his experience. And he's standing before God and telling the truth. And then Jesus said, "Peter, do you like me?" And Peter said, "Yeah, I like you." He said, "Feed my sheep." Jesus came down to where he was. Peter was not going to go to Agape. Been there, done that, messed it up the last time. I'm not ready for that yet. And Jesus doesn't give him a 90-minute discourse on how he should be ready for Agape with everything he's seen. Everything he's observed and experienced. You should be ready for Agape here, Peter. Nope. Jesus comes down to his level. That's fine, Peter. Right now, you're seeing yourself as you are. You're distrustful of yourself. I'll bring it down to, I like you. Feed my sheep. Isn't that what the cross is all about? Isn't that what it's all about? It's not about us climbing up to God's level. It's not about us building ourselves up to get to Jesus' level. Ever. That's not what it's about. It's about Jesus coming down to our level. Experiencing the things we experience. Dying a death that we die. It's about Jesus coming down to us. That's what our message is about. Eventually, Peter did get to Agape, and we know historically he did give himself for Jesus. Peter slept 3 times, denied 3 times, and declared his love 3 times. You know, not everybody has the same talents. But I remember when I was in med school that I'm fortunate enough to be married to a pretty good cook. And we had nothing. And Margaret, we'd have enough for a meal, and Margaret would put a meal together. And my observation is, I think I might be able to put a meal together. That part I might be able to do. But the next step is a hard part. Leftovers. Leftovers is the hard part. I remember we used to say the peeling off our potatoes and cook them. I love peelings off potatoes cooked and fried. That's great. A few eggs, I'm ready to go. The person that can take leftovers and make you think it's a new meal, there's a good cook. There's a good cook. I'll stay with that one any day of the week. That's a good cook. That's what God does. When we've exerted and expended everything that we have, and we find ourselves lacking, we find ourselves short, God and Jesus take the leftovers and make something really better than the original out of it. Better than the original. Did all this work? Did it take? Did Peter just stay at Filio and never get to Agape? Did he always just like Jesus and never love Jesus? On the day of Pentecost, there were people from all over the world gathered in Jerusalem, wondering what was going on. And these apostles got up and spoke. And Peter led the discussion. And Peter, in front of this huge mob, remember 3,000 were saved that first day. We don't even know how many were there. 3,000 were saved. Huge crowd. He had no trouble getting up and saying, "Therefore let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God hath made that same Jesus, whom ye have crucified, both Lord and Christ." It took. It took. He had no trouble at all. He had no trouble at all declaring that Jesus was God. Later on in Acts, he and the others are brought before the leaders and are told not to preach. And they were beaten and told to quit it. And it says they departed from the presence of the council rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his name. The same guy that was scared to death of a little girl. Scared to death of someone finding out that he was one of Jesus' followers. Scared so much that with an oath he would deny Jesus. That he ever knew him. Same man. Yeah, there's hope. I think that you and I are on a journey where we build up our spirituality and then life kind of tends to happen to us. And sometimes we worry when that happens. You know, I'm high, and then all of a sudden I implode. I'm not quite where I want to be. And we worry about that. And maybe in some sense we should. In some sense we should. But in other senses, that's where I meet myself. Is there. Peter met himself. Hi, Peter, I'm Peter. He introduced himself to Peter and got to know Peter in the midst of the implosion. And sometimes those hard times are where, if we handle them correctly, even if we think there's no hope, we will come out of them stronger and better than ever. And we and our lives can be put back together like Humpty Dumpty. Because of all the instructions that we have in the Bible about how we are to grow and to be, sometimes I fear that we put expectations on ourselves that are unreachable. And we find ourselves constantly disappointed in ourselves. Constantly wondering, why did I do that? Why did I break a promise at the end of the day I made in the morning? Why did I do that? Am I ever going to grow up? Am I ever going to be the Christian that I should, whatever that means, be? The answer is no. No. If we go through our Christian life with that attitude, you will wake up every morning disappointed. Wake up every morning feeling insecure, invaluable, not valuable, not invaluable, not valuable, wondering what your purpose is. Wondering if it's worth it or you should just go fishing. It's not about us. It's not about us. Yeah, we're growing. We're getting better and then we fail and then we grow and then we get better and then we fail and then we grow and we get better and we fail. But it's not about us. It's about Jesus. Because there's not a person here or anywhere in this world who will stand before God in judgment and say, look, God, I grew up enough. I got it right. I didn't fail. I kept all my promises. I did it right. Not going to happen. Not going to happen. All we can do is say, Jesus, God, I believed in Jesus. I took him as my own. I declared and confessed that he was mine. And he saves me. The invitation is yours.